Also thank each one of you for that had part this morning, devotions, song leader, and in the Sunday school. Each one of you teachers, God bless you for the effort that you put into that. And I trust that we can continue to worship God this morning as we look into God's Word and see what He has for us. For a title this morning, it's taken out of Joshua 24, 14, and 15. The title is, Choose You This Day Whom You Will Serve. And you don't need to turn there. You can turn to Jeremiah 10. But I want to read to you verses 14 and 15 where that title comes from. And it's a familiar title. We all know, perhaps some of us have mottos in our houses with this verse on them, and it is an excellent thing to be reminded about. Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve Him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Choose you this day. And this message came as I reflected on Glenn's message last week, as he spoke about God and Jesus and the I Am statements that Jesus made. And I was following along with Glenn as he was going from reference to reference, and my Bible fell open to Jeremiah 10. And I must confess, I got a little sidetracked last Sunday as I just kind of scanned this chapter and then tucked it away for later on. And I thought about the different things that I experience at conference as well, just little snippets here and there. And I want to think about idolatry this morning. Now, I know that's not in my title, and yet it sort of is suggested in there. I want to think about idolatry. What are idols that we face today? Let's take a little bit of time and read the first 9 verses of Jeremiah 10. Hear ye the word which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of the heathen of the heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the custom of the people are vain, for one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not. They are upright as a palm tree, but speak not. They must needs be born, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain. For as much as among all the wise men of the nations, and in all their kingdoms, there is none like unto thee. But they are altogether brutish and foolish. The stock is a doctrine of vanities. Silver spread into plates is brought up from Tarshish, and gold from Uphaz. The work of the workmen in the hands of the founder, blue and purple is their clothing. They are all the work of cunning men. And we'll just stop there and think about what he wrote about in light of what Israel faced with idolatry. Think about how foolish it is, how one man goes out to the forest or to a tree, he cuts it down, and I don't know if this is how it completely was back there. I don't know if the man that cut the tree down went ahead and carved the image, but possibly he cut the tree down, hauled it to another location, or perhaps he simply cut it down and stacked it at the edge of the woods. Another man took the wood to another man who fashioned an image, who then took it to another man who spread it with gold and clothing, When you think about where the gold and the silver come from, there was a series of men over here that dug it out of the earth, and there was a process till it was available to put on the idol. And then they get done, and they bow down and worship this thing. Think about the foolishness of that. Man created it from so many different steps. And perhaps they all made a living doing that. The workman that cut the tree down, the man that transported it. Each one of them was providing for his family in some sort of way. And at the end of the day, perhaps the man that cut the tree down went into town one day and saw an image that he wanted to worship and bought it with the money that he made cutting the tree down. And he brings it to his house and he falls on his knees and thanks it for survival. Think about the foolishness of that. Why do we need to look at idolatry today? Why do we need to think about idols and worshiping idols today? How many of us go to town and buy this little figurine, bring it into our house and worship it? I think there's places in the world left that people do that. They worship this little object that they bring from town. Well, we're more advanced in thinking than that, are we not? So why do we have to think about idol worship? We don't bow down and worship idols today, or do we? Or do we need to think about it? Is there things that we face that become idols to us today? I believe it was Seth Bauman that gave the first presentation on, and I don't have the entire title, something on Anabaptist vision. And he mentioned that through the years, there has been a number of confessions of faith where men sat down, recorded them, they talked about and looked at the things they faced present day, looked at scriptures, and then they wrote out a confession of faith. This is what we believe. We believe that for today, these are the pressures we face. This is the scriptures that we need to focus on. The entire Bible, but this is what's threatening us today. The thought he gave with that is through the years, godly men have sat down and wrote a confession of faith together, things that they faced. And as I was sitting there, I wondered, is it time for us to write another confession of faith? I think it was the early 1900s, if I have my dates correct, the last one that was written. You go back to the early 1900s, and were those Anabaptists facing what you and I face today, the pressures? To a certain degree, yes. But also there are things that have changed that we face today that they did not face back then. And it's just a thought that came to me. What is the current issues we face today? What tends to pull us away from a life of discipleship? And I wish I would have more time to just give so many of the things that blessed me. But I believe it was Seth again, talked about three things that separated the Anabaptists. And baptism wasn't one of them. It was not one of the main three things. And I'm pulling from memory. Actually, maybe I have it in my notes here. I know that the life of discipleship was one. Church brotherhood was another. And I'm not finding what the third one was. Oh yeah, here it is. A life of discipleship, church as a brotherhood, and ethics of love and non-resistance. That's the key things that separated the early Anabaptists 500 years ago. And we're looking at things this morning that will separate us from a life of discipleship. That was one of the marks that separated the Anabaptist church from the local Catholic and Protestant churches, was that life of discipleship. Well, thinking again this morning on idol, What is an idol? How would you describe that? And I went to Webster's. It's not like I didn't know the definition, but I enjoy sometimes something pops into my mind when I look at that. And the first definition was an object of extreme devotion. And I want us just to stop and hold that thought this morning as we go through. Is there objects in your life and mine that have extreme devotion? And then the second one was a representation or symbol of an object of worship, a likeness of something, a false conception, a form or appearance, visible but without substance. In other words, what was written here in Jeremiah, these wooden creations, they had a visible form and appearance, but there was no substance to them. The people had to literally pick them up and move them from place to place if they moved. There was no life to them. They didn't breathe. You didn't have to feed them. You didn't have to do anything with them. They sat there and wouldn't move until a human came and moved them. That's what that definition is. And I think we as Christians understand that an idol is very simply is anything that comes before God. Anything that comes before God. Anything that takes first place in our lives above God. We know that is an idol, and these statements are correct, but what are these things that we face this morning? What is pressures that you and I have to deal with? And if we don't, we're not going to be on the right rails to heaven. We're going to get off track, and we're going to go a different direction. What are these objects of extreme that can tend to come and have extreme devotion on our part? Referring back to that confession of faith idea, part of what I believe of being successful to reaching the vision is knowing the pressures that face us. Now, that is not the only thing to do. We have to have a vision. We have to know where we're going. We have to understand the path of travel. But I think it does us well to understand what is the pressures. What is the things trying to derail us from the direction of travel that we're going? How do we know how to resist those pressures if we don't understand what they are? Well, another thing that we discussed just privately as ministers that got this thinking going as well is somebody raised the question, is it in, and I'll put it this way, I guess. We have a line drawn when we go to invite ministers to speak here for like a series of meetings or something. We draw the line at if they allow the radio or don't have a stand against it, we don't ask them. And somebody asked, is that even relative anymore? Who really puts much stock into the radio? And should we continue on with that standard, especially in light of the new conference, starting to find our way? Took us on a journey of things that we face today. And that also inspired me. I was already thinking about idol worship and idolatry, and it just kind of added to my thoughts. Things that we face that have the potential to steal our devotion away from God. I think there are timeless things that always will be there that want to steal our devotion away. And maybe it's not things, maybe it's just one thing. But I think the idol of self, that is perhaps something that not a single generation will ever lose. Is our old nature, our selfish direction of travel that we want to go. That is something that every single person, no matter who they are. And if you think about it, all these other idols directly feed self. It is either a self-worship or self-security. And so self is just kind of one of those things that's always there. And I don't plan to spend a lot of time on this, but I think it's good for us to recognize the fact that idol worship is directly involved with self. It's all about me and satisfying myself. (Clears throat) And we thought a little bit about here in Jeremiah, how these people in this era of time were so foolish as they took a part of wood, metal, whatever, made their idols. But did you think about today? How much different are we today than them? We have things that take our attention. We have things that begin to hold our devotion. And think about the process of that. I'll just use something that I can easily fall into, and that is vehicles. You think about all the different aspects of what makes a vehicle, how the thing is put together from scratch, if you will. And I know that God has given man the source of raw materials, but man takes and shapes that thing. But those vehicles sitting out there, that nice pretty row of vehicles, they're not moving unless God brings enough wind to move them. But those things don't come to life unless you or I get in and turn the key. And even then, it is not life like God has given us. They won't go anywhere unless we direct them. But there's other idols that are like that. And suddenly, maybe we are just as foolish as them for worshiping the things we do. What are some things that we face today that is idolatry? And I know that this is not an all-inclusive list, and I welcome your thoughts and inputs later on about things that you face. But I have three general areas of what I think we as Anabaptists face today. And I think some of these things are things that we face that are, especially our Anabaptist forefathers 500 years ago, had no idea would even exist. And they didn't have to deal with them. But as it was in the Old Testament, in Israel's day, as it was for the Anabaptist men, the founders of the Anabaptist movement, there's still objects being created. And maybe they're not objects specifically created for worship. Maybe to a degree they are. Maybe some of the people that are putting some of these objects together do have the idea that they want people to worship this, but there's other things that they just become that. They're legitimate tools and items that we can use, but somehow they steal our devotion to God. But I see a shift in that today. Back in the Old Testament, they didn't have that, but perhaps what is the real thing driving it is what's driving the Israelites and all of us, all generation, and that is maybe covetousness, a desire to hang on to something that is tangible, being able to, I don't know if that's why the people in history, like I find it hard for me to really connect with the idea of fashioning an object specifically for worship. Like that is the idea from start to finish. But maybe they needed something tangible to hang on to. Because I think that is what traps us today. There's idols, and I'll just say what number one is wealth can become an idol. Our wealth can become an idol to us. There's a certain amount of security there. If I have enough money in the bank, or if the cash flow is coming in enough, there's a certain security there. And I don't know if that is what the tangible thing is for us to hang on to. But wealth can become an idol, number one. We as Anabaptists grew up being taught to be honest, to be men and women of integrity, to work hard. And here in our country where God has placed us with, if we have honesty, integrity, hard work, do a good job, or just take care, you can accumulate wealth fairly easy if you call hard work easy. But we live in an era of time where something good, you know, like honesty, hard work, integrity, will reward us financially. And wealth can become an idol to us. We can begin to focus on getting more, placing our trust in it. It can begin to take our devotion away from God. And as we begin to catch up on bills and on mortgages and things become better and better, what happens then? Many times when businesses start out, the business owners and even sometimes some of the first employees that work there, everyone really has to watch their pennies, either at home or in the business world. You struggle the first 5 years to get that business rolling. Then your name is out there. People begin to understand that these are good, honest people. And this goes for about any business in America here. If you're trustworthy, then your name is spread out. People begin to come. The cash flow is good. The accounts payable are met. Suddenly, it's not such a struggle every week to get the accounts payable where they need to be. And then I ask this question, which rises first, our standard of giving or our standard of living? And we have to navigate that carefully. Because God gives us extra, not to make our lives better, but to share with those in need. And that can be a very real struggle for us. Maybe I should have started with this question first. What is the goal of your accumulation of money? What is your vision with what God has placed in your path to do? And this covers every single one of us. You don't have to be a business owner to answer this. Even employee, as he works, what is your goal? What is your vision with what God has placed in your path to do? And one of the things that I struggle with is a very simple teaching of Jesus, and that is, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. He taught that so early on in his ministry, to seek the kingdom first. Does that mean that we always need to put church and church projects in front of work? I think one thing we often do, and I don't know where this teaching really come, but to a degree we begin to separate our jobs from kingdom work. Going out and doing business is a little bit different, and yet it hasn't always separated that, because we know that we have to be honest and that people are watching our testimony. And then we tend to often look at providing for our families and having a little to spend on our hobbies. And then at the end, oh yes, if we have enough, we'll give to the kingdom work. How about having our jobs, having our whatever we do, seek how to please God as we do that? Whatever our business is, wherever we are employed, and let paying the bills, providing for our families, all of that come second place. We are going to work. Each one of us that has a job, and for you moms that stay at home, you're doing kingdom work with your children. Don't ever forget that. Being a homemaker is the top paying job of life, if you will. You are beginning to shape little ones for the kingdom of God. And that is such a key, awesome responsibility for you. But going back to this thought, each one of us, we go out to do our work. Those of us that have jobs that pay earthly money, we go out. And what is our mindset? Is it to make a little bit more money? Or do we go out with the very front thought of how can I serve these customers today as Jesus would serve? And I think that is very key into thinking about, is wealth going to become an idol or not? As we do not seek the kingdom of God first and we begin to pursue wealth for the money of it, for providing for our families and then seeing how much is left over to have fun with, I believe idolatry is beginning to slip in and creep in. And it's not something that just one morning you wake up and you decide that day that you're going to go worship wealth today. No, it comes in just a little bit at a time every day. You think less about, and I think less, we think less about serving Jesus today through our work. And suddenly our focus is accumulation of wealth and it becomes an idol to us. Number two, our possessions can become idols. Houses, vehicles, tools, recreational vehicles. There is so many items that we have at home in our garages and storage sheds and in our houses and the houses alone that can become idols. Many times we as a church sometimes try to regulate these things. And I believe that's somewhat right. But deep down in the hearts of each one of us, we know whether or not a certain possession has become an idol. And it may be within our church guidelines, just going back to that little thought. I know that our conference has guidelines on the vehicles we buy, and I know that some churches do not have that, and it's fine. We could have a vehicle within our church guidelines, and it could still be an idol to us. And you cannot really answer that question for me, and I cannot really answer it for you. It's a question that you need to answer in your heart. And it's not necessarily just vehicles. To some of us, vehicles are a bigger thing. To some of us, houses are a bigger thing. To some of us, tools are a bigger thing. The very things we use to make a living with. Is the possessions that I have for God in the advancement of His kingdom or for a status symbol? Ask yourself that question. Why do I have the things that I have? Is it so that people will think more highly of me? What is my view of my possessions? For use as tools or for personal pleasure and fun? These are questions that we need to answer, and I don't know that we always need to go out and sell what we have because we wake up and realize it's an idol to us. Maybe we will need to do that if we can't get a hold of it. But what is our thoughts and attitudes towards the possessions? Do we justify or come up with legitimate sounding reasons why we need these possessions? I really need that four-wheeler. I mean, it would just help me so much. And I don't know if any of you have one for pleasure. I'm just trying to get us to think and use real examples of things that we have. Is having a four-wheeler wrong? No, I don't think so. If it's a tool that you can use and that is there to honor and glorify God. But why do we have it? Why do we try and come up with all the reasons why? Or can we just stop and take an honest look at why we think we need to have them? Is there a legitimate reason? And if no, can we just tell ourselves, well, no, I don't need it. It'll take my devotion away from God. Are we trying to keep possessions in such a way that people will think better of us? These are all thoughts that I believe all of humanity at some point with something slips through their mind. And we may not even realize it. Or do we consider God's thoughts on our possessions? And I'd like us to just keep your fingers in Jeremiah 10. We're coming back there, but let's go to Luke 16. A couple of verses that I want to read here with this thought of, do we consider God's thoughts on our possessions? Now, the beginning of Luke 16 here, Jesus is talking about a steward that had wasted a lot of goods. I believe the Bible calls him the dishonest or unjust steward. His master called him into account, and he went around to all his friends and canceled their debts or made them much lower. Jesus talks in verse 13 about not serving two masters, and then verse 14. And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things, and they derided him. So Jesus was speaking, and the Pharisees heard him. And they already had a heart of covetousness. They didn't want to take an honest look at what Jesus was talking about. They didn't want to take an honest look, and they derided him, made fun of him for his teaching. And then Jesus said unto them, ye are they which justify yourselves before men, and try to give good reasons why they live the way they did. But God knoweth your hearts. I want us to stop and think about that this morning. As we take inventory of our hearts, God knows your heart. I don't. But God does. He knows why I have the things I do. He knows why I buy the things I do. God knows. Let's continue reading. For that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Because of the Pharisees' condition of heart, they derided what Jesus taught. And I began to ask myself this question, what is highly esteemed in society today? What is highly esteemed? Now we know God's thoughts on it. It's an abomination. What men devote their lives to, what steals men's devotion, the objects, the things, what takes men's hearts away from God, that is an abomination to God. And God knows our hearts sitting here this morning. Is there something that we have that is highly esteemed and we esteem it very highly? And we feel good about the position it places us in society by having it. Do we understand that is an abomination to God? What is highly esteemed in your circle, our circle of friends? God knows our hearts. He can see right in there as we serve Him with open hands or as we try to justify what we do and have. God can see right in there and He knows where we're at. He knows if we are living to serve Him or ourselves. He knows that. And it is to Him that we will answer someday. Number three is technology can become an idol. And I know that I have can become an idol because I believe in all three of these things. They can be useful tools for the honor and glory of God. But they can become an object of extreme devotion. We did not come to a solid conclusion on what to do with inviting ordained men that allowed the radio. A lot of things came, a lot of ideas floated through the air, and it was good for us to consider it. And I'm not even sure right now which way I would go if it would have came to a vote. I know what I was thinking as soon as it came up, but as discussion happened, there was something else happened in my mind. Here's one thought that floated up as we discussed this idea of not allowing or continuing on with drawing this line at the radio. One man one brother said, well, we carry the radio and the TV in our pocket wherever we go. And that's true. We do. We have more consistent option to music right in our pocket, probably much broader than what the radio ever had. Technology can become an idol. Here's another thought that floated in with this question. Where are the people? This is going back to like when General Conference, like when Eastern and the Fellowship Movement and all that started. Where are the people whose parents said about the TV, we will just not watch the bad things. It's just for the news and the weather. We're going to use it for a tool. Let me ask you this. Where are their children today? Aren't you glad that maybe your grandpa or your father took a stand against those things years ago? Now, what are we going to do today? And I don't know what to do with all these various aspects of technology. It's here to stay. I don't think we're going to get rid of the internet and computers and smartphones and all that. It's here to stay. And it's probably here to advance even more than what we can imagine. I know Glenn talks about when he went to school, he had a teacher that told him, you know, someday you're going to carry a phone in your pocket. And Glenn and his peers made fun of the man for doing that. Well, look at where Glenn is today. He has a phone in his pocket. What is it? All I'm saying by that is, where is technology going to advance from here? Not only that, is it, technology is very fascinating. It grips our attention. And we can look at our children and see how much attention it steals from them, and it does the same thing to us. Technology can become an idol. It can steal our devotion from God. We talked about Facebook, WhatsApp, and other things. And one thing that became clear to me is becoming more clear, that this thing of technology is much more of a spiritual, is much more of a threat to our spiritual existence than any other thing that we have faced before. We talked about AI, artificial intelligence. It's a fascination to many. And perhaps those of us that are adults right now carry some bit of skepticism with that. But what about our children sitting beside us that are going to grow up with all they know of is having access to artificial intelligence, being able to go to Google and ask it pretty much anything, and it'll give you an answer. I can remember when the cell phones, the ones that you could carry in your pocket, came into existence. But I also know of people not too much younger than me that they don't know any difference. All of their life they have known about cell phones. And to them, they have a little bit different view of the cell phone than I do. One of the things about AI is there are, you can ask it some questions and it will refuse to answer, because they have set a standard on it of just not bringing up just any information or pictures. But here's the interesting thought. That standard is set by society around us. Okay? The society that lives around us and is okay with a lot of different things, that's what the standard of is set by, whether it's going to be acceptable by the society or not. Are we okay with the standards that society sets of what is acceptable and not acceptable to come up on AI? We say Marketplace is okay to use on Facebook. We can use Facebook for advertising for our businesses. But I think we all know that on Facebook there is so much more that can captivate our attention. It will steal our devotion from God. We will waste time. Time that once it's spent, we'll never get back. We will waste time on there instead of taking care of our children, giving them face-to-face time that they so desperately need. If our parents struggled to raise us in a godly way without all these things, how do we think we're going to raise our children with so much more to captivate our attention? And these are just, there's so many more apps and places to go. These were not even all the things we talked about. Are we doing what the previous generation has done with TV and the radio by saying, we're going to have it too, it's just going to be a tool. We're going to allow some of these apps, we're going to allow some of these things because we can use them as a tool. Yeah, we know there's evil with them, but we won't watch it. It'll just be there. There's one thing that technology does, and it hurts us, and over time it destroys us, and it destroys God-given normal relationships. Our cell phones, our electronic devices, they were created so that it's me and the device, and that's it. We interact with it. It can answer our questions. It does so much. It creates fake communities and relationships. It establishes a relationship with us. We don't need other people. It has answers. It can soothe me when I'm frustrated. I can find pleasure and fun there. And I need no one else in my life at the moment. That's not the people God created us to be. How are we going to go forward with this? These are just some questions that I'm pondering in my own mind and heart because technology can steal our devotion from God. And dads, I ask you this question. What example are you leaving for your wife and children to follow as it relates to technology? We need to be the leaders through this. We can't expect our wives and children just to figure it out. They need fathers to lead them by example for the generations to come. And as the Lord tarries, what would have happened? Where would you be at today if your father didn't take the stand he did and lead by example? Where would you be living today? Let's go back to Jeremiah 10. I want to read a few more verses here in Jeremiah 10. I start reading at verse 10. But as the Lord is the true God, He is the living God, an everlasting King. At His wrath the earth shall tremble, and the nations shall not be able to abide His indignation. Thus shall ye say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. He hath made the earth by His power. He hath established the world by His wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by His discretion. When He uttereth His voice, there is multitude of waters in the heavens, and He causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rains, and bringeth forth the wind out of His treasures. Every man is brutish in his knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image. For His molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. They are vanity and the works of errors. In the time of their visitation, they shall perish. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is of the former of all things. And Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. I want us just to draw and think about, number one, I want us to reflect on Glenn's message, and I hope that we are taking the time to study the I Ams. I didn't spend a lot of time reflecting and thinking about God and the I Am of it. But if we seek to follow the I Am, there will be no idolatry. But we need to face reality as humans. There, as life goes on, and I think we can pull the example out of the children of Israel as they traveled across the wilderness. And even as they entered into Canaan, it seemed like there was this cycle of where God, they would fall and call upon God. He would answer their prayers. They would be healed. But as time went on, they would fall back into idolatry. I think that we are made of the same flesh and blood today. And if we don't challenge ourselves, and if we don't take a real look at where we're at in life, this pattern of idolatry will follow in our generations. If we don't stand and worship God, notice verse 11 talks about the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth. And he was talking back there about the gods that they worship. But we have gods today that steal our devotion from God. They're going to perish at the end of time. Your house, your vehicle, your possessions, they, if by chance you are putting too much devotion into, or whatever we is stealing our devotion, our technology, it's all going to perish. It's going to become nothing. And I believe what Jeremiah is calling these people today to do in this time is look to the God that's going to stand for eternity. He hath made the earth, verse 12, by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom. The very things that God, the very raw materials that God has created for us to use and to benefit from, they're going to perish. And is our hearts in extreme devotion to that God? Satan knows that his best tactic for humanity is a little deception here, a little busyness there, and next thing we know, our devotion is pulled a little bit away from God today, a little bit tomorrow. By the end of the month, if it isn't brought into check, we're going to start on a very slippery slope away from God, and we will pick up momentum unless God in his mercy reaches out and stops us, and we can have confidence that he will. But I encourage us to search our hearts this morning. I don't know. I can't see into your hearts this morning and know where your devotion is. I trust that it is with the living God, but I also know that we are humans and that we need reminders, just as the children of Israel did. As we think about the Sunday school lesson this morning, there's so many things that could have changed that picture for Moses and Aaron. Are we willing to search our hearts and look at the things that we need to change? Are we willing to lay ourselves out before God and ask him to touch the things in our lives that are taking too much attention? And when he does that, are we willing to make the change? Are we willing to do without to serve God? Is there something that's stealing my devotion to God? And if there is, what will I do about it? Let's kneel for prayer.